on this episode of Pottages.
They just kept hitting it. It's like, we get it. Now make him act on it instead of just staring there anxiously.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest aspects of the franchise, at least to us, is how much it changes. And the way the approach they've taken with Tri definitely fits into that, instead of staying the same.
Yeah, Joe has a girlfriend now. Like, that's freaky.
3 years, Izzy had basically learned to, like, hack the system and, like, take over the world. He created a whole other plane of existence for the Digimon. Like, are you kidding me?
I need your password. You can use mine to get on the internet.
Pottages! Welcome to Pottages, episode T1.1, Another Pair of Tries.
Pottages is your critically nostalgic, analytical tour through the Digimon anime.
I'm Jeff Ruberg.
And I'm Ashley McDonald.
And we're back to talk about Tri Part 1 Reunion, with three segments and three special guests.
Miranda Sanchez from IGN, Hope Chapman from Anime News Network, and Crystal Bell from MTV News.
We go into details about the events of the movie, so be warned if you haven't gotten around to seeing the movie yet, which I don't know why you'd be listening to this if you haven't. We also discuss the poster and plot details for the second movie, so if you're trying to avoid any spoilers for the second movie, check our show notes for time codes to avoid. You can find our show notes while listening in most podcast apps, or at pottages.com/T1.1. And sorry for the audio quality at a couple of moments in the interviews, we're still working out kinks and recording with remote guests, and we didn't perform the proper ritualistic sacrifices to the Skype gods, so they were a little angry with us. And also in exciting news, it's time for the second Pottages Try Giveaway Extravaganza! Woo!
It's open until Sunday, January 17th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
So it's most of the same prizes as last time, which we got in Japan from theaters, arcades, and the anime cafe. So what are those prizes, those old prizes?
The Tri Theater pamphlet, a Tri poster flyer, Tri clear folder, and the teacup keychains, bookmarks, coasters, and many, many pins.
Many pins. But we also have some exciting new prizes that weren't in the last round. And so the first one of those is the January issue of the Fabri magazine, which has on the front cover the movie 1 poster, on the back cover the movie 2 poster, and there's a bunch of artwork and interviews inside, so it's really cool. And we also have the CD singles to try, for Butterfly, Braveheart, and I Wish. Those are, and I think, all exciting.
I mean, three things were taken away. Like, three people won things.
And there are, so there are three fewer things that were...
But we added 4, so technically there's 1 more thing. I don't know. Rules. Same deal as last time. We're going to pick 3 names. If you're picked, you get to choose any single prize. Go to pottages.com/contest for the full rules.
So like last time, there are several different ways you can enter, and each way you do enters your name another time, so you can enter several different ways to increase your chances. And there are 9 different ways this time. You can like the contest announcement Facebook post, comment on the announcement Facebook post.
Like the contest announcement tweet, retweet the announcement tweet.
Like the contest announcement Tumblr post, reblog the announcement Tumblr post.
Comment in the contest announcement Reddit thread.
Support us on Patreon for 5 chances.
Or leave a review of the podcast in iTunes and email a screenshot to prodigious@gmail.com for 10 chances.
So there are a few changes this time around. We added the ability to enter by leaving a Reddit comment, because some people, last time we posted on Reddit, and there wasn't a way to actually enter the contest through Reddit, so then there was at least 1 person who didn't have social media accounts, and we thought, well, kind of wasn't fair. So now there, if you don't have social media accounts on those other platforms, you can do it through Reddit.
Okay, so before each... being a Patreon and her donating on Patreon and leaving an iTunes review both just counted for 1
entry ticket thing. Give you 1 chance to win.
And we realize that's kind of unfair because they're more work intensive than just clicking retweet and stuff. So we wanted to be more fair and we wanted to show appreciation to our Patreon. So now all of their entries are worth 5 entries.
So for being a Patreon supporter, you get 5 entries, and for sending us a picture of an iTunes review, you get 10 entries. If you've already left us a review in iTunes before this giveaway, you can still send us a picture of your review. And we'll also have a link in our full rules post with instructions on how to leave a review in iTunes if you don't know how to do that.
And so, yes, if you emailed us last time, like, just email us again or whatever, right?
Yeah.
May the odds be ever in your favor.
Gambatte kudasai. So now on with the interviews. Our first guest is Miranda Sanchez, associate editor at IGN and one of the hosts of IGN Anime Club.
So the first question we're going to ask every guest, Miranda, what does Digimon mean to you?
So deep.
Yeah, it is. Digimon's actually very, very important to me. It's one of the first anime I was really into as a kid. I was a big tomboy when I was young, mostly because a lot of my friends were guys, and you know, those are the people who played video games and Yu-Gi-Oh! And everything else. It's like, that's what I want to be a part of. Like, that's what I'm interested in. So I like rejected anything feminine, and it was just like, no, that's not for me, because else the guys won't like me. But with Digimon, my favorite character is Mimi. So, very different from how I acted. Like, she's my favorite so much so that, like, my nickname for my grandma is Mimi. Like, she calls me Mimi all the time, and it's just, she's, like, she's perfect.
Well, now I feel bad that we have another host who's super into Mimi, but he's not here.
Aw. But yeah, so it means a lot to me, as like realizing my identity as well growing up. Like, I didn't think it was okay to be feminine and like video games and stuff. And that's wrong, but you know, and I love the show so much. I watched the first two seasons and a little bit of later ones, like here and there. But the first two seasons are, of course, like my core foundation for Digimon.
Of those first two seasons, which did you prefer?
You know, I remember the first one more, so it was hard because I was really young when I watched these, so I don't quite remember all of them, and I'm rewatching them right now, and so I'm almost done with the first season, and I'm about to jump into the second season, and I'm super enjoying it, so.
Yeah, it's kind of disappointing when things you go back to and they don't hold up at all, so it's good that... Yeah, it's good that it holds up.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy that I'm enjoying it as much as I think I did when I was a kid.
Is there any, like, are there any big differences you're noticing now as you revisit it?
For a very short time, I was able to watch the Japanese dub on Netflix before they took it off a few months ago. And I noticed how well the English dub is. Like, even though, like, some of the material and, like, how they translate it is a little bit, not, like, dumbed down, but it's not as maybe intense as some scenes are in the Japanese version. I think it was interesting seeing how well they still adapted it, even if they kidified it for the U.S. I think, the voice actors they chose are really good. Like, I appreciate it's hard, especially with like back then when you saw a lot of dubs that were bad. So it's nice that Digimon was treated very well.
Yeah, I kind of like in my head lump it together with some of the like 4Kids dubs that came right after it, like One Piece and Shaman King and stuff. They were like, I actually haven't revisited them, so I'm not sure if they, but they in my mind they were really bad. And
yeah.
Yeah, is there anything that's been, like, disappointing to look back on?
How much the English version uses the theme song in each episode.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I actually didn't notice it until my boyfriend pointed it out. I've been, like I said, just marathoning it. That's all I did over Thanksgiving break was just watch Digimon, and it was great. Nice. And, yeah, he said, geez, does that song play, like, every episode or what? Like, how many times does it play? I'm, you know, now that you pointed it out, it's kind of annoying. I mean, that's, like, a thing with any transformation or magical girl, any sort of anime. Like, they kind of loop a thing. But with Digimon, it's the exact same song. Instead of, like, everyone having their own thing, it's like, nope, everyone gets the same treatment, same song. It's the intro. It's the outro. It's transformation. That's it.
Yeah.
Okay, so now on to Try, because Try is the hot new thing. So, okay, just before I just want to get out there before I start, like, injecting my own language. So how are you thinking of Try Chapter 1, Part 1? Are you thinking of it as a movie, an OVA, or as episodes?
So I still think of it as a movie because it's originally released. We are just getting it in the form of episodes. Like, you obviously tell this is supposed to be a movie because cut, like, the episodes end really abruptly. It's like, oh, that's not an end, but okay. So I kind of skip a lot of the, I was just like, I really just want to download this and cut them back together. Let's put them back. It's like just the, whenever I've addressed it, I've just like the first chunk of Digimon Try, because it's really weird.
Yeah, totally. So I've heard some of your thoughts on the IGN Anime Club podcast, but one of the reasons we wanted to invite you here was to hear more thoughts. So for also people who haven't heard you on there, what were your overall thoughts on the movie?
So when I first talked about it on Anime Club, it was before I had time to finish it. Mm-hmm. My thoughts have changed just a little bit, but not significantly. Overall, I think it's got the Toei treatment, if you know what I mean. And modern Toei stuff right now is just kind of a mess. If you look at Sailor Moon Crystal, if you look at Dragon Ball Super, like there's just some scenes that's like, what happened? Like, are you guys okay? Like, is there a cat running around? Like, you just had to catch it. Just like, well, the scene's fine. You know, like what happened? You see that, I think, within the first few episodes, chunk parts of this first chunk of Digimon Tribes. Weird. You see it more because watching the last two episodes, they seem a lot cleaner. Some of my problem with it is that it seems like it just wasn't given enough love. Like there are moments here and there when it really concerns you. Finally, get the character personality. This is easy to remember. And then of course, when Mimi comes, she's like full throttle. I'm like, yeah, you're great, of course, perfect. But then you look at like Taisora and Matt, and a lot of their stuff is just kind of angst. Like I'm almost not with Sora because she just moves confused or stirred most of the time, and that's not really how she felt in the originals. It's kind of weird here and there, but there are story beats that I think are really good. The thing that bothered me a lot was the music. A lot of it sounded like stock music, so much so that it kind of, like, pulled me out of the show. I was like, what is this? it's very computer-generated, like, you can tell. Like, just listening to how horns play. Like, I played clarinet in college and in high school and in middle school, so I have, like, know instruments pretty well. And I can kind of tell, like, whenever something's been kind of cut around the edges, it's like, well, we're just going to program this on the computer, going to figure it out. Fine. Hmm. It's just funny because it pulls you out of some scenes, especially some of the action scenes where it's just not quite there. Like, you're missing something, and it's the music.
Yeah, I definitely noticed something, like, off about the music, but I couldn't, like, put my finger on what it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously not a like an actual orchestra or anything, but it just feels so cheap. Like, it was, like, a side note, and it shouldn't be. I mean, if you're going to do proper fight scene, like, you want amazing sounds to go with it. But I like where it's going. I think it kind of wandered a little too much in the beginning of the episode, or chunk, whatever. It's, what are we supposed to call these?
Movie part one.
Yeah, part one of part one.
Yeah, part one of part one.
Yeah, the part one and two kind of wandered a little too much, I think. They kind of hit the nail on the head, like, a little too much about Tai being shaken up about how much damage they are doing to the real world with their fights. Like, we get it. Like, we're not dumb. This is obviously, the Digimon people have grown up. We're mostly adults. I mean, sure, you'll have some younger viewers, but they're like, let's go back to this cell phone scene 5 times.
Yeah. I was like, whose cell phone even is that? Like, why is that so traumatic to you? I don't understand.
I thought it was Ty's at first. I was like, oh no, he broke his cell phone. Like, how's he gonna get in contact with him? I know this, like, tower's down, communication's down, but oh no. And then I was like, oh, he pulled out his cell phone. Oh, I mean, I guess it's trying to, like, the dramatic, like, oh, is this affecting other people? And he's old enough to realize that. But they just kept hitting it. It's like, we get it. Now make him act on it instead of just staring there angstily off into the sunset. Like, it was a little slow, but it definitely picked up at the end. Like, I really enjoyed the last part. And when they finally kind of got into what's going on.
And, like, Alphamon's fight.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like just this mega huge Digimon. It's like, hey, guys, how's it going? It's like, oh, all right. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely agree with, like, the, like, especially the thing that I noticed about, like, the repeating that scene of him being, recalling how there's damage. Like, it seemed like they cycled through, like, a portfolio of images, like, over and over. Like, and it was like, okay, we just need to, like, a brief glimmer is all you need, but, like, here, let's show all the images each time. And it's like, okay, no, we don't need to see every one of them. Like,
it would be like, yeah, cell phone, whatever, bridge, like, okay, yes.
I mean, there are a lot of things that just felt like it was like they just lingered on it a bit too long. And I'm just like, yes, okay, get back to whatever the point of the scene is.
Yeah, like, some scenes were just too still. Like, you'd have, like, maybe one person moving, everyone's just, like, frozen. And you can see it's probably just a production thing. Like, it's, like I said, it's getting the Toei treatment. It's not getting the funny, which is a little curious because Digimon's not a, you know, suddenly revived thing. Like, Digimon's been going on. Like, it's got a following, so it's had a following, and it's had, like, a lot of products and stuff, and, like, this is one of the things we're confused with, like, you know, with Sailor Moon, it had been kind of dormant for a while, but Digimon's, it's been going, so, hey, why not, where's the production value here, you know? It's a little weird.
Yeah.
This first part, it's still fun. I'm gonna watch the rest for sure, you know?
Yeah, I think at least for me, it would have to be pretty bad to... I mean, especially because we have a podcast. So that's probably not a good sample. Yeah. I think for most Digimon fans, it would have to be pretty bad to turn them off completely.
Yeah.
So do you have any favorite parts of the 4-episode chunk movie part thing?
I really liked it when Matt and Ty got forced into their own
Ferris wheel.
Yeah, like their own little cabin in the Ferris wheel. That was good. It was so good because like they really played it up too. That's where you got like the really good Digimon feels. Whenever everybody else was in the other one, and they shoved Matt and Ty together, like they're taking pictures, they're Skyping in the Digimon, you know. Like it was cute.
It was sillier but also serious at the same time.
Yeah, like it had a really good balance to it. And of course, it's always fun to see their tension, and we know they should be together. But
I also really like the lead up to that was just like, I think everyone was expecting like, okay, clearly it's going to be which one does Sora choose to go in with? And she's like, nope, you guys on your own.
Really? I didn't think
that. Oh, I mean, and maybe like the scene itself, but like definitely like the expectations of the fans are going to be like, well, who's she going to choose in this? Like, we need to settle the eternal debate. And
early on, they made her do that. Like, soccer game or going to the or it's concert. Come on, you got to choose. And she's like, I can do both. It's like, no, you can't. Sorry.
Well, I really liked her response at some point, which is like, I'm just not going to either. Just screw both of them.
Yeah, she's not going to. It's either both or neither. And I'm like, yes, Sora, that's right.
So did you have any least favorite parts? I mean, I guess we talked about like the kind of the music and the awkward timing.
Yeah, just some parts where the music failed the fight scene. Like you have like great animation and fighting, but then the music was just very lackluster, and it's just weird. Like you don't experience that very often, and it was just disappointing to see it in this.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like I feel like it's not something that I've experienced. I guess I don't really watch tons of anime with like fighting like this, but like I guess it's a testament to like how normally it works so well and comes together.
Yeah.
Well, it felt like it just didn't, like a bunch of the pieces may have been competent on their own. They just didn't fit.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it felt. Like the animation's like, oh, well, this is a really cool early fight. And then it just sounds weird. One thing I was a little disappointed to was how we got to see the rest of the Digimon come into play. Agumon got a nice little entrance, but everybody else was just like, hey, we're here. Here's a Pan.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Welcome back. We love you.
And they had like a weird conversation with themselves. It was very strange.
Yeah. It just kind of flopped over. It's like, oh, hey, here it is.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, we're happy, but oh.
It kind of even ended on that sad note because Palmon is like, where's Mimi? And yeah. Palmon's like, where's Joe?
Yeah. That was cute.
Yeah, I guess maybe that was intentional that it was like.
I don't know.
a bit of sadness to it, too, because that was really weird. They weren't there for that.
I thought that was kind of okay, though, because it shows like how they're just doing their own stuff. Like they have their own lives. They still have to live as humans. They have other things besides being digidestined, you know?
I guess the only thing that's weird about that is that Mimi was technically like there and on her way. It just didn't like wait.
Yeah, like why did they take Palmon there? Why didn't they take her to the airport with the other agent lady?
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah, but Joe does definitely, I appreciate his like not being involved and having other things that he's like, it's like in Adventure, it was always like Joe is off on his own thing. And it seems like, he's really smart and also doesn't really need to be studying, but he's doing it anyway because he's Joe. But now it's actually get to see like, you know, he's actually struggling and like, it's not easy being Joe.
Yeah, I really appreciate that in this character. You don't often see a character who's trying so hard fail.
Yeah.
That's very rare because usually like, oh, I'm going to do the best and I'm going to be the best. And I am. And he's like, I just got to keep studying. I got to keep studying. I'm studying and I'm still failing.
Yeah.
It's because he has a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That scene was good, too.
So are you a shipper in general?
Sometimes. I mean, I like to kind of follow the show and let it do its thing. But for this one, you're like, oh, hey, Matt and Ty, how you doing? They're laying it on just a little bit.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how it'll be. Because I mean, based on posters, it seems like this was the Ty and Matt episode. Or part or whatever chapter,
right?
So I'm curious like if it's going to be a recurring thing or if it's going to be like, you know, focus is going to shift each time and this is like all of the Matt and Ty we're going to see.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes down to it, it's always Matt and Ty, so I do like the Izzy and Mimi thing. I think it's really cute.
Yeah, I think
I think we
always found it kind of, so as we were watching the show, we found it kind of weird how I think it's mostly the Japanese fandom that like that they always shipped Izzy and Mimi or Koshiro and Mimi. And like, especially when you're watching Adventure, like they don't really have many moments together aside from like the one episode where Izzy just ignores Mimi and like Mimi storms off and on.
In the maze building.
Yeah. That's like not a very good, you know, like they didn't really bond well in that.
Yeah.
So to ship them seems kind of weird, but now there's much more basis for it. So I approve of it now.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, before, Mimi was, they're all pretty independent except for Sora and either Matt or Ty, but Yeah, this one feels a little bit better.
So if you had to, it's kind of tough because it's like, you know, we haven't seen how, where the rest of it goes. Like maybe that'll affect your opinion of this part later on. But for now, if you had to rate this chapter out of like from 1 to 5, how would you rate it?
Well, probably give it like a 3.5. Can I give a 3? Can I give half?
Yeah, half stars.
Yes. I think like 3.5. It's like in the middle. It's like good. Like there are really good moments that are satisfying, but then there's a lot that's not. So it's holding back.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Well, I thought lots of like good moments, but it's like, but if they don't fit together well, I mean.
Yeah.
And our final question, do you have any like predictions for what's going to happen, or any, I guess two sides of the same coin. Do you have any things you think you're pretty sure are going to happen, or things you really want to happen?
Well, I'm sure they're going to defeat Alphamon. Or maybe he's infected and they're trying to fix him and he'll get fixed. It'll be okay. I want them to go to the digital world, of course. And I don't know. I'm just kind of let it flow, you know, just see where it goes. I do want Izzy and Mimi to get together. I think it'd be really cute. Just like this little thing.
That would be exciting.
Yeah.
I am curious like how much they can really go with any of these. I mean, given that we know that like there are like the epilogue spelled out who gets together with whom in the end. Like I wonder if they're going to dare upset that with like sharing relationships that they know are going to. Because it makes sense for kids to like date in high school and not stay together through adulthood.
Yeah.
But I wonder if they're going to go that route or if it's all going to be teasing like this episode.
Yeah, they might. I mean, Minnie might just be playing around.
Yeah, one of our hopes before we knew Tri was going to be more OAV movie was that like they would show Takeru and Hikari in a relationship and we would just all believe that they broke up because that's what children do.
Yeah.
But I'm like, they're just teasing me now. That's mean.
Yeah, that too. It's so weird because this is the first time I've really remembered the Japanese names. It's like, what is happening? It's like Hikari. It's like Kari. It's like, well, that was simple. But I want to see more of them too. And we only got to see a little bit. And I know it's not their show right now, but it's still tying that. But I just like them a lot. They're cute.
Yeah. If we had like a full 50 episode or whatever season, that would have been cool to see relationships start and end and then, you know, have it kind of like the book close. Because as it is, before this was even announced, it was like, why aren't they together? Grr, grr, grr. And, do you have any final thoughts, things you wanted to get in, didn't get a chance to say?
One thing that bothers me is Agumon's color. He's really pale.
He's like washed out orange, yeah.
Yeah, like that's, I had that when I was just looking at a picture of Agumon, I was like, man, he's awesome with his color. That's all. I'm still really excited to see what's next. I'm really happy to see these characters back and living, you know, fighting. But I hope it does improve a little bit within the quality, but we'll see.
You can find Miranda on Twitter at HavocRose. You can find her work on IGN. And you can hear her talk more about anime on the IGN Anime Club podcast.
So we are talking here. I listen to hundreds of podcasts, which you might know. And I try tens of anime podcasts. There's no good way to say like hundreds, but tens. I've tried tens of anime podcasts, but found very few actually worth recommending. Anime Club is one of those rare exceptions. It's really good, podcast full of smart, fun people, and it's just really refreshing. And now our next guest is Hope Chapman, assistant editor and writer at Anime News Network. So the first question we're asking everyone is, what does Digimon mean to you?
What does Digimon mean to me? I think Digimon ignited my love of, I guess, adventure, and like monsters and like...
Adventure lowercase?
Yeah, exactly. Adventure is what the show's name. But I don't know. I think it was one of the earliest kid shows that I ever saw that had like stakes on the level of kids that I was supposed to identify with. It wasn't just like Spider-Man or whatever, which, you know, I think the Spider-Man cartoon that was on at the time, the 90s Spider-Man, was kind of hokey to begin with. But it wasn't just a superhero cartoon where, you know, they were in kind of peril or whatever. It was characters that I was meant to identify with because I was the same age and, you know, and had maybe similar life experiences, and they were sort of beholden to their parents and stuff like that. Like, people in that stage of life being put in like grave danger and, you know, having, and it was, and none of it was like super hokey. It wasn't played for laughs, sort of like Power Rangers or something like that. It was, although that aired around the same time, it was sort of actually scary. And, but I didn't feel scared watching it because it has such a sense of fun to it. So I don't know, just adventure, like high stakes, you know, oh, bad things could happen, like when one gets killed or, I saw Tamers not long after I saw Adventure, because I think Adventure was either in sort of reruns or it was late run when I started watching it. I watched it certainly out of order the first time I ever saw it. And Tamers was pretty close to it. And Tamers was the one that really left a mark on me. I like both Tamers sort of because it was the first time I had seen of that like story threads of that maturity and that caliber aimed at a kid audience. And so, you know, I would see lots of stuff after that was like that, both anime and Western media, but that was, you know, it was early formative stuff where it was like, oh, this story is taking me seriously as a kid viewer. So I guess that's what it is. It's like, you know, a story that took me seriously and also kind of helped to ignite my love of monsters. Like Pokemon kind of did that too. And I always liked like weird animal type, you know, monsters and stuff like that. But Digimon helped, certainly. I liked the sort of gaudy aesthetic of the monsters, whereas the, like Pokemon are more marketable or more animal-like, but Digimon were sort of crazy and a little bit sort of intentionally ugly. The word I like to use is cutely, like they're cute and ugly at the same time, and you know, makes you want to protect them, but it also looks like they could like deal some serious damage. They look violent and kind of a little scary, so stuff like that. I guess, sorry, it's really long-winded, but that was it's a loaded question, you know, like meant to me as a kid.
Yeah. I mean, in what ways has it stuck with you in the 15 years?
Well, I mean, when I started doing a retrospective on the series back in 2010, it really sparked a conversation between me and everybody who saw the videos, which was a lot. Like, those were my most popular videos, I think, by far. So many, many thousands of people saw them and commented, and I loved different fans, and I really enjoyed hearing from international fans, because Digimon was a show that, it, you know, had German versions, had Latin American version, and all of them were kind of different and interesting to explore, and how people reacted to them was really different. One of my favorite things to this day is German Renamon, who is very butch and very like masculine, and how that affected kids in the way that they saw her. And, you know, that stuff is really funny to me. Like, I don't know. All that stuff is really interesting. And so the way the Digimon has stuck with me as an adult is mostly by coming back to it as an adult. And when I was 20 and, you know, 25 now, that was 5 years ago. And finding that there were so many people who were still attached to it. And I was like, oh, this really is something special. And so when Tri came out, I was really surprised, because I didn't think that Toei was going to take that approach to it, was going to aim something at adults who grew up with Digimon, because it just doesn't happen. Like, that, yeah. There's no way that Pokemon, for instance, is ever going to do that, or Yu-Gi-Oh, because that's just not the kind of franchises that they are. But Digimon was that way. It was actually weirdly less about the toys or the marketing and more about the emotions that kids attached to the series, which was meant to sell toys, but it became something that people attached to on its own. And you know, that was wild. I was like, I can't believe that, you know, you never see an anime doing that. Like, it's really weird. You don't see Western media a lot of it that does that. It's like, this was a thing you grew up with as a kid, and here's an adult version of it. Like, it's just weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was exciting. And, you know, so I guess just, I don't know, coming back to it and feeling like as an adult, I could come back, and it was always sort of meant to be returned to as an adult. Like, a lot of the story is about adults coming back to the world of Digimon after, you know, 10 years, 15 years. And so I think that they've kept that spirit through the franchise. So a lot of the fans still feel that way about it. It's like, oh, you're never too old for this.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest aspects of the franchise, at least to us, is how much it changes, and the way the approach they've taken with Tri definitely fits into that, instead of staying the same.
Yeah. Joe has a girlfriend now. Like, that's freaking That was one of my favorite parts of it. I guess spoilers. I don't know.
Oh no, this is spoilerful.
And when we saw it in Japan, we got to see it in movie theaters, and that was the only part where there was an audience reaction. They were like, "This is hilarious."
Yeah, that was the most shocking. Japanese audiences, my experience, are usually pretty quiet. compared to American audiences, but so that got like a reaction was
that got like giggles and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy. It's awesome. It was certainly the most visceral reaction I saw on Twitter. Well, no, that is the second most. The most visceral reaction I saw on Twitter was the Tai and Matt or Tai Chi and Yamato like hugging. They weren't like hugging, but it looked like they were hugging. And then the shot with them in the carousel, everyone was just losing it because it wasn't just people misinterpreting or like, you know, doing the Tumblr thing with it necessarily, which not necessarily a misinterpretation, but just, you know, fans being fans. It was the show itself was deliberately framing these characters this way because Toei knew what its audience wanted, which is weird because it's like this was a children's show and now it's being framed like a standard adult anime that has homoerotic tension in it. You know, very standard shonen stuff, same to teenagers. It's weird, you know? It was like, oh my god, oh, they're really doing this. Okay, awesome, let's go, you know?
Yeah, so I guess to frame your thoughts about Try, I think I know your answer to this, but we're asking everyone which seasons you have seen of all Digimon, and which is your favorite of those?
Oh, I've seen seasons 1 through 5, and I have seen part of Cross Wars, but I didn't get that far into it, both the Japanese and in English. It was just always the length, and I was always busy, like, you know, as a working adult, like working, you know, work with anime for a living, so I have to work with, I have to watch a lot of stuff and write about a lot of stuff and keep track of a lot of stuff, so I could never get that far into Cross Wars before something else came up. But I liked what I saw of it, and I saw exactly one episode of Young Hunters, which is the one that I think everybody saw, even if they had only ever seen Adventure. A lot of people saw the one episode of Young Hunters where they bring back literally every protagonist to fight Myotismon, and that was sad. That was it was lame. I felt really bad watching it. I was like, oh, this isn't really what I wanted to see. But no, I've seen the first 5 seasons and I have varying degrees of feelings about all of them. I feel very differently about all of them, but my favorite is Tamers. Adventure is a close second, but Digimon Tamers left the biggest emotional impact on me, definitely. So yeah.
So before we, because in these questions I'm going to be using language and I don't want to bias how you would describe it, have you been thinking, just in the way you word things, of Try Chapter 1 as a movie, as an OVA, as a film, as 4 episodes? I mean, how do you think about it?
I see it as a movie. Like I see it as the first of like 6 movies, because when they did, I watched it as 4 episodes on Crunchyroll, but it didn't really feel like that. It felt like the opening and ending were cut in at awkward times and the pacing was off. It didn't feel like 4 episodes. It really didn't. It felt like one film that they chopped into 4 pieces conveniently. So to me, it's like a movie that just got interrupted every once in a while for songs that I was totally happy to listen to over and over. Like I love the new recorded version of Butterfly. I think it's really kind of inspiring because Koji Wada battled throat cancer and survived, and this new version of Butterfly is more like restrained and like, it's hard to describe. It's more like, I don't know, it seems more wistful. It kind of reminds me of like Galileo Galilei, who is another J-pop artist, kind of song. Instead of it being like all spirited and blasting like it was originally, it's like wistful, and it's really kind of tear-jerking because it's like, oh, right, like, you know, this has been how many years and this guy is still able to sing this after what he went through, and it just fits the tone and everything. So I watched the whole opening every time and the ending as well because it was really cute.
So do you have any other general thoughts, like overall impressions in the movie, like their lasting impression? If anyone wants to hear more thoughts, you can read Hope's great review on Anime News Network.
Yeah, as I say, I can plug that. Yeah, I wrote a review of the Digimon Try movie for Anime News Network, so if you go there, search for it, that's mine. You can read my thoughts in detail. But I guess just general thoughts is I'm just really happy that Toei didn't screw it up. It felt like coming home again. And even, it was funny because nothing happened necessarily. It wasn't like ambitious or whatever, but I wasn't necessarily expecting that. Maybe that would be too much to reasonably assume that they would do, but they didn't screw it up. The tone was the greatest problem that they could have run into, and they got the tone perfect. So the plot, the character interactions, familiar, but like nothing daring or like the most daring thing was A, Joe has a girlfriend, and B, like it makes a lot of sense, but seeing Izzy as this filthy rich entrepreneur who's like already out of, he skipped past high school and he's already like a working adult was really weird. It was cool. He kind of like assumed that was going to happen for him, but it's like I feel like Digimon Adventure has always been, and this is not a criticism because he's awesome, but I feel like Digimon Adventure has always been biased toward Izzy. Like at the beginning, it looks like Izzy should be just as important as Sora. Looks like Izzy should be just as important as Sora or Kari or something. And then he turns out to be like on a tie level. He's like almost more important than Matt as far as like how much stuff he does and how much stuff he gets done. And he has some of the most memorable moments. Like the people working on Adventure obviously like became biased toward Izzy at some point and then just like gave him all the best material over and over. But anyway, like my point, I guess, was it was really nice to watch that and feel like a sort of a homecoming. They nailed what it feels like to come back to that as a grown up, and without it being like inappropriate for kids or whatever. It was just wistful and charming and nice. So yeah.
Do you have a single favorite moment or part?
I think I liked anything where the Digimon were interacting with the... It's not really anything specific. It's not a specific moment because that movie really wasn't very plot-driven. It's just anything where the partners were interacting with their kids in a way that was, like, familiar and sweet. Like, when Tai is sitting with Agumon by the river and Agumon doesn't really... He doesn't understand, like, Tai's dealing with a complex moral quandary, and Agumon doesn't really know what to say to make it better. He's just sort of sitting with him, like, sort of like a pet or a younger sibling or whatever, and saying, it'll be okay. That was sweet. Tentomon freaking out because Izzy started caring about his looks was really great. Like, he was like, you care about your looks? You're trying to impress women. Like, he's like, ah! Like, Izzy is freaking out like he's his dad or something. And they all have just these different sweet relationships to their partners. Palmon being really worried that Mimi hadn't shown up because she lives in America. And, like, all that stuff was just, like, yeah, it was nice. Hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, I really like that element of how it seems like the Digimon haven't changed and the kids have, and they're all dealing with it.
Yeah, that was really that really shone through a lot, I think, was, and I think Agumon said that, like, the first thing he shows up is he's like, wow, you really look different, and he's like, you don't look different at all, and that really reflects in their or no, he said, you got smaller, but which is not true, he's the same size. Tai got bigger.
Yeah, which I think is like a feeling that everyone goes through, or not everyone who goes away anywhere or goes to college or comes back for like winter break or anything, and is like, all these rooms just feel smaller now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it was really startling with Patamon. Patamon's the most startling one because he's, it, you know, like a lot of Adventure, the joke would be that Patamon would be like struggling and could lift TK just a little bit. If he really tried, he could lift TK off the ground. Hmm. And that was funny. And now it's like, oh man, he could fit like the palm of TK's hand. yeah. Really weird now.
Like, now he like sits on his shoulder and like is his little perch buddy.
It's like, oh, this is so bizarre. And it's so sweet though.
Yeah. Do you have any least favorite parts?
Least favorite moments? Yeah, I think my biggest issue was the, I didn't care for the, I didn't care for the attempt to make Tai, like, to give Tai conflict, because I didn't think it worked very well. Like, they draw out his moral quandary in a way that doesn't really make sense, and then they use, like, very kind of, I don't know, shruggy imagery to get it to play. Like, oh, I could have hurt somebody. Look, here's somebody's cell phone that looks kind of like my sister's cell phone that's been crushed. It's like, it's not really an evocative image.
Yeah.
And it was repeated a lot.
It's repeated like at least 3 times.
Yeah, it was a lot. And it was like, I don't know, guys, come on. Like, that's just not very... But yeah, anything that where they really drew it out a little too much. I think anything with the kids interacting in a way that was too serious. Like, when the kids interact, it's more fulfilling when it's lighthearted. Like... Izzy and Mimi giving Joe shit for having a girlfriend. That stuff, and or Sora, like, worrying about both of her love interests. And it's like, we already know which one you're going to choose. They already ruined that for us. Like, that stuff is cute, but the stuff where they're sort of angsting or looking at each other longingly, or Matt's worrying about his band or whatever, like, that stuff was a little dull. So I guess that, I don't know. I feel like I went on too long about the stuff I disliked when I didn't dislike it that much. I was just reaching, so I talked for longer. But the stuff I liked, there's way more of that. Like, the fights were great. The evolution sequences, CG, but they always, whatever. Like,
It's much better CG than 15 years ago, at least.
Seriously, I was going to say, you cannot complain about the animation in Try, because it's like, maybe you would be comparing it to, I don't know, other anime projects today, but if you're comparing it to Adventure, like, it looks like $1 million. Like, you can't, yeah. Like, don't even, you know, it looks way better than Adventure did, like, in pretty much all circumstances, so I can't complain there. But the fights, once they went to traditional animation, look great. Like, Gatomon punching, Gatomon or Tailmon, if you prefer, punching Kuagamon in the face. It was great, and it actually, like, works, because it's a huge beetle, and then there's this little bitty kitty cat, but the cat is, like, denser, because she's champion level.
It's so great that she finally gets to fight as champion level.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It was great.
It only took her 3 seasons to get to the point where she could fight as a champion again.
But, yeah, it's pretty awesome.
So what are your... We've alluded a little bit so far, but what are your thoughts in general about shipping in Digimon?
Initially, I was put off by it. When people do shippy stuff with Digimon and their kids, it really kind of creeps me the f*** out, because they're children. That's pretty much it. Like, that's the start and end of it. They're kids. If it's puppy love stuff, then that's cute. But, the Izzy and Mimi stuff has always been cute because it's sort of an opposites attract thing, and they obviously, like, they have a weird odd couple thing going on. So that's fine, but I don't, it's kind of like what I said earlier, the fun stuff is fine. The sincere stuff, like the serious dramatic stuff, people like sincerely shipping Ty and Matt as kids is weird. And they're like, oh, it's so serious and angsty. And it's like, they are 10 years old still. No. But now that they're of high school age, I think it's totally fine. No, just, it's like, okay, no, this is the age where, like, you know, people date and kiss and stuff like that. So, yeah, the shipping now is totally fine and completely hilarious, especially when it comes to the Ty and Matt stuff. The seriousness is fine. Like, so, yeah, the shipping is, like, officially okay now is kind of my stance on it. It's like, now it's okay. When they were little, it was kind of weird, but, you know.
Are there any ships that you're particularly looking forward to happening or seeing more of?
The Ty Sora stuff is already just sunk. It's already dead in the water. The obvious one, the one most people have been talking about is Izzy and Mimi, which is just, it's just fun to watch, like, even if they don't quote unquote get together or whatever. I'm not as invested in that. I just want to see both characters out of their element. And so when they interact with one another, they're kind of out of their element. They each frustrate each other for different reasons. So that's fun. So I just want to see more of that. I guess, weirdly, I'm not sure if anybody is, we know that the 02 kids are going to come into it at some point, and we know that Yoli and Ken get married, which I was always weird. So I'm actually kind of eager for them to give that some basis of any kind. Like, yeah. There's some basis for Sora and Matt. We saw that, like, they put that into the show, but there's almost no basis for Yoli and Ken. Like, she has a weird fangirl obsession with him, but
that's, like, over by the middle of the season, and then it's never brought up again, and then
yeah
like, once he turns good, it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that, like, when they come back into this, they'll give that some sort of basis, and, like, Ken I don't know, has some sort of relationship with her that exists, because they had no she had a cute weird crush on him in the very beginning of the show. They never interacted in a real significant manner after that. And then at the end, it's like, and they got married. And it's like, what? When? Why? So I guess I hope that that's explored at some point. I like Ken. So I think everybody likes Ken. The other three, but I like Ken, so.
Yep.
Summation of 02.
I respect what they were trying to do with Cody. It wasn't fun. It wasn't fun or interesting to watch, but I respect it on, like, on a textual level. You look at the outline of his character arc, and it's like, oh, that's very nice. And then you watch it, and it's like, oh, it's kind of boring.
Yep.
So, you know, but oh well, 02. What are you going to do?
So most of the questions we have right now are oriented towards people who don't have a platform to talk about Digimon already, and you already have a review. So asking you to rate it is kind of like, well, just look at her review.
Oh, it's, I mean, yeah, that's fine. Just...
Well, I mean, so if you had to rate it out of, like, star ratings, like 1 to 5.
Well, provided you are already a fan of Digimon, like, you're already, like, in it, then 4 out of 5. I wouldn't give it higher than a 4, purely because not a whole lot happens. Like, it wasn't like 5 is like, or 5 or 4.5 is like piss yourself, jump up and down good. And this was like more like a mellow, sweet, smoothie kind of good. So I guess four. Yeah, it's like really solid. They didn't mess anything up. Lots of good feelings, and lots of excitement for the next one because we get Joe and Mimi Megas in the next one. So excited. And but it, yeah, but there wasn't like anything that had me jumping out of my seat or like, oh, that's ambitious or daring or anything. It was just, you know, real solid.
Hmm. So leading into that, Joe and Mimi in the next one, do you have any specific hopes or predictions for things that will happen in the next movie or in the rest of the five parts?
Well, I mean, I hope, I love Joe and Mimi, so I hope they get a lot of screen time and a lot of stuff happens. I would be, it would be great if Gomamon just even fought anything. He didn't do anything in that whole first movie. Although, okay, so favorite moments. I tweeted this and this got retweeted a bunch of times. The moment where Gomamon crawls through the window and Joe picks him up and hugs him was, that just destroyed me. I wasn't ready for it because I was like, because he wasn't there. Like everybody else was there. Joe is, you know, just trying to get into college or whatever, and he stays home. And it's like they could have died, and you weren't there, and whatever. And I was kind of mad at him. I think is what it was. So I was mad at him. And then Gomamon crawls through the window, and Joe just runs over and grabs him, and like there's no, you know, there's no frustration or anything. It's just immediate like affection. So I was like, okay, I'm not mad at you anymore. It's okay. I know you probably had your reasons for not wanting to be there, for not being able to be there. But yeah, like he did not participate in that first movie because grades and stuff. And the progressive, those were really good scenes. The progressive scenes where he shows up, he's working his ass off, he shows up and he's only going further and further down the ranking list. That was actually really, I thought, thoughtful. And that was a really good scene. Because you feel exasperated for him. It's like, you know, he's doing his absolute best, and it's not only not good enough, but he's still getting worse somehow. So that sucked. Sad.
Yeah. But Gomamon came from the airport to his house somehow and jumped through a window for him. So.
Wasn't he in the car? Did they drop him off? Maybe he got dropped off.
Because he ran off before the fight was even over.
Yeah, he talked to Palmon and was like, I'm going to go find Joe, bye.
And like, no one notices.
How far did he have to waddle? Because like all the other Digimon, it's like, oh, they can run or fly. Like Gomamon has those little flippers. Like he just dragged his blubbery body.
I guess he can swim at least.
Yeah, you're right, but I don't know how much. They were at an airport and he lives in the inner city. I don't know how much swimming. Yeah. Man, so he just dragged himself all the way to his house.
Oh wait, actually this makes a lot more sense than I realized. Haneda is on the water and so is Odaiba, so he could have just swam.
That's true. He could have swum.
I mean, it looks like it's actually like, you know, like right across the bay kinda.
Yeah. But yeah, that was a sweet moment. I wanna see Joe like overcome his anxiety about the future and just kick some ass in the next one.
I really love that. Just like that arc for Joe is something that I didn't see coming. Like he always seems to know what he wants to do in Adventure in Zero Two. I never really realized that like maybe he has trouble achieving that, you know? Like,
yeah. Well, he's determined, but it is interesting. Like they have, like, I feel like in most other shows, most other kids shows, lesser kids shows, they would have, Joe and Izzy would be the same character. It would be the nerd. It's like, oh, he's studious and he's like smart and nerdy. So it would be the same character. And, hey, that's, it was in Zero Two. Cody was Izzy and Joe. literally. And, but in Adventure, it's interesting. Like, Joe is never said to be particularly talented or smart. No. He's just a hard worker, and he, like, cares about his future, and he cares about being a responsible adult, and he wants to be a doctor and help people. Like, he has this great civic duty and paternal responsibility, but at no point do they say that he's particularly smart. And we were seeing that in Try for the first time. It's like, oh, he's not actually very talented. Like, he just has to work really hard to achieve this thing that's kind of beyond him, which is getting into the number one, you know, university or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, especially in contrast to Izzy, who's just, like, has a side job that gives him an office, like he's like doing surprisingly well.
He has a huge apartment. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like developing like future technologies just off the cuff. And he eats in a fancy, like I think the introduction to him was his parents were having their anniversary in this fancy French restaurant and he's ordering in French. And it's like, oh geez, he's really moved on up, I guess. Like, well, because he's like 16, right? Like he's 16, yeah. 17, no, younger than that. He's younger than a lot of the other kids. So he's 15 or 16, and he's an entrepreneur 14, living actually. On his own, ordering French food in French for his parents. That's crazy, you know.
That's startup culture for you.
What Joe is struggling to get into the number one university. It's like, oh right, they're not the same. They're not both the nerd. Like there's a difference.
I think that poster did so much more to make me excited for the next one than anything in the actual movie.
Yeah, because, I mean, you saw who they're fighting, too. It's not just, oh, my gosh, Rosemon and Vikemon. It's also, oh, it's also, shit, what? You know, like, what happened to the Zero Two cast? don't know. Are they, they've been shadowized, I guess. Maybe. We'll see.
Yeah, and hopefully that means they'll actually be involved.
Yeah, I think a lot of people's frustrations has been like, they show you the 0-2 kids in the very beginning, but then never acknowledge them, and that's really frustrating.
I wonder how common that frustration is, though, because most people, a lot of people want 0-2 to just be erased from existence, so.
Yeah. The, I don't know. I was okay with seeing him knocked out like that because I have a lower opinion of 0-2 and Adventure. So I'm like, like a little bit of that. But it would be awful if they were being like killed or something. But you know they're not going to. It's like that they're not killing. That's not that mean spirited. So just seeing them like at the beginning, it's like, hey, guess who won't be in this movie? And I'm like, yay, bring him back in the later one. I don't, you know, right now. I we'll meet Davis later. You know, later.
But what do you think about? Do you think there's anything off about the fact that no one really mentions them, or like,
I thought that was kind of weird and shitty. Yeah. I mean, like, it's, but at the same time, so it's a difference between what makes sense in universe, which to me, it didn't make sense in universe that nobody would mention them, or that it would, that they would be talking, because they meet the new DigiDestined, who I like, by the way. I believe her name's Mai or May. I don't remember.
Mako. It's weird because she's Mako and her Digimon is Meikumon. It's like, you had no creativity in naming her.
Well, I don't know. I thought the Digimon was cute. It wasn't the most original looking one. It was a little over designed, but it had a sweet personality. So I like Mako, but they're acting like when she joins the team, they're acting like it's the first time that this has ever happened. And it's like, are you forgetting the world tour and like, and the entire second series and all that stuff that happened? Is just, they just completely forgot about that. Cause they're like, wow, another one of us. This is really special. Like they freak out about there being a ninth DigiDestined. And it's like, there's like hundreds of you, but forgot 0-2 happened. So I thought that was weird. I thought that wasn't really fair, but on a metatextual level, I was nothing but happy about it, because on a critical level, it really was pretending like Adventure was the story and 0-2 was like, oh, we don't talk about that, or we'll address it later. Mm-hmm. It was just addressing the feelings that you got from Adventure first and foremost. And so it was like, yeah, that's kind of better. It's kind of what I wanted at heart, I think. So
yeah, I appreciate they have enough time and seem to be trending towards, you know, 0-2 being involved in some way, but just not the focus right off the bat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any closing thoughts? Anything you wanted to mention? Didn't get a chance to?
I'm super excited for the rest of the movies. I'm glad that Toei didn't mess it up, and then we're getting something like that seems to be made just for us, which is surreal. I never thought that would happen with a franchise like Digimon, which is, you know, it's often sort of swept under the rug or forgotten about by anime fans at large, but it was really formative for a lot of kids. And so I'm glad that those kids, myself included, are getting kind of what they want as adults. Like, that's nifty. And I am super stoked to see what I've been waiting to see since I was 10 years old, which is Megas for all the other characters. Like, that's going to be so exciting. Since I was 10, like, so that's 15 years of waiting for this to happen, and it happened, you know, so that'll be exciting.
Cool. If people want to find you on the internet, where should they go?
You can find me at Jesu Otaku on Twitter, JESUOTAKU. On Twitter or on Anime News Network, most of the editorial I had a helping hand in, and then anything with the byline Hope Chapman, I wrote it. So, yeah, basically, that's pretty much it.
Hope didn't mention it, but you can also find her on many episodes of Anime News Network's podcast, The Endcast, which is another one of those rare anime podcasts which I'd wholeheartedly recommend. Their freeform Q&A episodes are almost always really interesting, and their series review episodes are some of the best discussions about anime I've ever seen. But don't listen to the Escaflowne episode, because Ashley was on that one.
Yeah.
And our final guest today is Crystal Bell, writer at MTV News, and whose name you might recognize from the recent article, "It's Time to Finally Admit Digimon is Better Than Pokemon."
This is a question we start off every interview, and we just wanted to hear your interpretation of it. What does Digimon mean to you?
Wow, I mean, it's kind of layered, my relationship with Digimon. It, in a lot of ways, it was my introduction to anime, and I fell in love with the medium after, you know, becoming obsessed with Digimon, and then later it was introduced to Sailor Moon and now all of these other great animes. And so I really credit that to my early fascination and infatuation with Digimon. But more so, I love that it was a story not just about, you know, the DigiDestined, these these sort of this group of chosen ones who had these ordinary lives as kids and kind of stumbled into something extraordinary. Like, who doesn't want to go to the digital world and have their own Digimon? I think that was, it's pretty evident that that's awesome. But it was also so much more than that. It was a story about kids dealing with real things. And mainly I felt compelled to write about it. They were dealing with heavy subjects, life or deaths on occasion, but also you had those great stories of I loved Matt and TK growing up in a broken home. Like, as a child, when are you exposed to something like that? I don't ever remember watching something like that when I was a kid until Digimon. So, and for me personally, that struck a chord. And there were so many other stories. I loved Mimi's whole character arc. I mean, it just spoke to me on such an intimate level. And I think that's what the show is really great about. It was about the characters. And that's why I loved it. I felt like I knew each and every one of those kids. I felt like they made strides throughout the entire, you know, season one and even into O2. And that's why, for me, it was just a character arc and a character journey. And I love that the whole message of the show is like, you are in control of your destiny.
Your digi-destiny? Yes.
Exactly. Destiny. Whatever that may be. But it's yours to decide.
Yeah, that's a great message. Yeah, I think I too like found it. I mean, I don't know. I can't look at like all of television was on at the time, but like it definitely felt very different. And that was enough to like lead me also on the same path towards anime and other things that were, you know, like outside the American cartoon bubble.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just the fact that it was dealing with those deeper subject matters when meanwhile you could turn on. And I say this in my article, I mean, I think Pokemon was very different and it had its own quirks and its own pluses and minuses. But I just felt like the emotional stakes were so much higher in Digimon, and that's what I loved about it. And I love that it also introduced villains that weren't so cartoonish.
Mm.
Like, for me, I mean, that was the most awesome part of the show, is that at times you sympathize with those villains.
Oh, yeah.
Or you were drawn to them and you couldn't quite understand why. Or like, these are the bad guys and yet I'm kind of into it.
So of all the seasons of Digimon, which have you seen and which are your favorite? Or which is your favorite?
So I obviously have definitely seen Adventure and O2 after that. I even watched Tamers. I fell off after Tamers. I thought Tamers was a fine season. It just, I think for me, my love of the show, I was so invested in those characters, those original, you can call them the OGs, but you know, I loved Ty and I loved Matt and Sora and Mimi and Izzy and Joe. And you know, I loved the core original characters. So I think Adventure for me, I go back to that all the time. Like, I think O2 did some interesting things. I think it took some interesting risks, but Adventure was, I think, is my favorite by far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's also a real testament to, you know, like, Pokemon has kind of kept a bunch of the same characters over time, but like, I don't know if people are really attached to them in any of the same way that people are to the Adventure Kids.
Oh, for sure. And that's, you know, that's exactly why we have Try.
Yeah.
You know, they realized that and they were like, how can we capitalize on this nostalgia factor?
So leading into that, what were your overall thoughts on part one or chapter one, whatever it's called, of Try?
I loved it, obviously. For me, I definitely watched it episodically. I think as a lot of people in the US or in North America, I watched on Crunchyroll and I watched episode by episode. I study and watch and analyze TV for a living, so I thought they worked very well as episodes. In my brain, I was actually trying to think of it as a movie, and I kept going back to, no, this is like a TV series, and I kept watching episode to episode. So I think, oh man, I think it worked on so many levels. I mean, so many just nostalgic references to things. I mean, it's just amazing to see, obviously, these characters again, but also to see them evolve, or digivolve, I guess. But you know, I loved that Ty, who has always been like, you know, he's the leader. He's the ultimate chosen one. I love that he was sort of struggling under the weight of this responsibility. And he was finally, I think, worrying about the consequences of his actions. And that was something that we saw a little bit in Adventure and a little in O2. But you know, he had always been known as being somewhat reckless and he very much acts on his emotions. But I love seeing that in this reunion, this first movie reunion, that he was the one who was cautious and he was like, I don't know if what we're doing is right. And that to me, that just spoke so many on so many levels. And overall, the fact that there's now a government task force, you know, that has assembled the DigiJustin, I mean, that's amazing. That is exactly the kind of movie or TV show I want in my life. I love the fact that they're kind of like government agents.
Yeah, I know there's been at least a decent amount of negative feedback about Ty's hesitancy. And it's like, oh, we don't want, like, the main character should be, like, so strong and know exactly what he's doing. And I'm like, but this is, like, and then it gets, like, out of the blue or stuff. And it's like, but there's so much time has changed. And, like, it's totally natural for people to grow up in certain ways. And I think that depth is really interesting to add on to the layers of what we already know.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you have to think about it. It's 3 years. Like, how, there's a lot that can change in 3 years. And I think when you're that age, when you're 17 years old, and again, speaking from a completely, you know, North American experience, I mean, when you're 17 years old and you're about to graduate high school, it makes complete sense to me that he is thinking about things and maybe he's even projecting things. You know, I think we got a deep sense of, you know, Ty, when we meet him, isn't in the best spot in his life. It's a little bit of maybe he's kind of wandering, he's a little aimless. I think very much that they're definitely harboring on some of those O2 feels with the whole Ty, Sora, Matt love triangle. But it kind of feels like he's a little upset that he doesn't have the girl. You know, he's at an interesting spot in his life. And so for him to be more cautious, I thought that showed great leadership. Because I think a good leader should think about all sides of, you know, an issue. And I love that they kept in with the O2 timeline of like, people know about Digimon now and they're scared. The public is scared of them. And who wouldn't be, to be honest with you, if you saw these giant monsters, just like kind of like pixelated monsters pop out of the sky, I think I would be pretty terrified. So I love that they're kind of keeping with that tone and yet also keeping it very light. I think when a lot of people saw like the promotional materials for Try and they saw like early like video clips and whatnot, I saw some people online calling it like dark and gritty Digimon. And I didn't feel like that at all. Like I felt like, yeah, I think the animation style's matured and our characters have matured, but it's still funny and it's still light and it still has that kind of feel-good message at the end.
Yeah. It's also interesting. I guess it's because we're used to the dub. Like, it's a totally different kind of humor, too. It's not like, it's not just like puns all over the place. It's like, I can't even describe it. It's just like little character beats. And I think that those work so well with like, for us, like having like lots of knowledge of these characters, like them doing like the smallest thing would be like, oh my God, that's so great. And yeah, it worked really well for people who are really acquainted with it. And yeah, really good job on that front.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Cause for me, like when you have Tentomon kind of like getting emotional about Z buying his own clothes, like that to me was hilarious. And I think you would only find that hilarious if you knew Izzy and if you knew how far that character had come.
So far.
Yeah, so far. He's kind of, I don't know about you, but I was, so in terms of favorites, in like OG watching it, I think, of course, like every girl, I loved Matt.
Mm. Yes.
I was like, back when I was watching Adventure for the first time, Matt to me was like the epitome of like all things cool. And like, I wanted like a boyfriend like Matt. And he was like so emotional and angsty. And I just was like, oh, I could make you, I could fix you, I could fix your heart. Like, definitely that girl. But watching it, watching Try, I, you know, fell in love with so many other characters. And I had always loved Mimi, and I am the great Mimi defender. If you talk bad about Mimi, I will put you in your place. I still attest that she's probably the character that has grown the most from Adventure to Try. And I thought her arc in Adventure was amazing and emotional. And she just had grown so far. And I, in Try, she lived up to my expectations and more. To me, she was, even though she didn't get as much screen time as, say, Ty or Matt or even Sora, I thought she, like, lived up to my expectations. She really, the scenes that she had were definitely, I think, the meme-worthy scenes. I've seen a lot of, like, meme-ness on Tumblr.
Yeah. Yeah.
She definitely seems the most like comfortable in herself right now, whereas the others are still like, eh. Like she went to America and is like, I got this figured out now.
Yeah, for sure. And also just like, I love that she is sort of the fangirl of the group, and the fact that she kind of like ships Ty and Matt. And like, yeah. I love that. I love that she, you know, she kind of like pokes fun at Izzy because she knows he has this crush on her. She's just so like self-assured. And I think in that way, it's great to have a female character like that.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's also interesting, our journey coming back to Digimon for this podcast. Like, I went into it being like, no one really liked Mimi, right? And then, like, I think we've learned that, like, that's totally not true. I think Mimi has stuck with people the most as, like, kind of most memorable. And, like, they, when they revisit, they're like, oh, yeah, Mimi's awesome. So I think it's cool that she's finally getting appreciation.
I agree, too. I remember when I was younger liking Mimi, and they're like, oh, you just like her because you're a girl, and she's, like, obviously the girliest. And, like, yeah, I love that she loved pink, and I love that her Digimon is essentially a giant flower. Like, who doesn't love that? But I think she's actually so much stronger as a character than a lot of the others. And I think we're really going to, hopefully, my hope is that we're going to see more of that and try. Like, I feel like if you were about to get into a fight, you would want out of everyone, like, Mimi.
So are you super excited by the second movie's poster with Mimi and Joe on it in their mega forms?
Yes, I am. It's funny. I think Mimi and Joe were the two characters that kind of always got the shaft.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
And even in O2, Mimi more so than Joe in O2, but like, you know, they never got their due. And even in Try, like my one big complaint was that poor Joe, who is just struggling through medical school or whatever he's doing, we didn't really get a sense of like where he's at, except for that. I mean, we know he has a girlfriend, maybe, supposedly.
I see you doubt it too. Thank you.
Like, I don't know. I was like, it's not really true until you see it, right? You
right? Exactly. Her. Prove it to me, Joe. Prove it.
Exactly. So I love that they're finally, hopefully, that's what the second, the promotional materials for the second movie is hinting. Like, I hope that there will be more of a character arc for them.
So your favorite part of the movie, would you say it would be all the Mimi stuff?
Oh, I mean, it's so hard to pick. I love the Mimi stuff. There are like several things that I love. I loved the Mimi stuff. I love that she's a giant shipper and is just like busting everyone's chops. I love her. But I also, you know, I love the Digimon character beats, like getting to know them a little more. Like, you know, I love that they kind of have their own maybe Digimon playhouse, because it kind of looks like what they're getting is like a base of operations. And that's really exciting to see. I love that. It feels like they're a team, and it feels like, you know, they're an organized team, and they're going to maybe go on some missions that are a little bit larger than life. And that would be my hope. But, so I love that. And I loved, Matt changing his band name from the Teenage Wolves to Knife of Day, because obviously you need an upgrade. Also love TK's new look. I know not everybody loved it, but like, I'm here. I am here for hipster TK.
Have you seen, there's I forget where it's from. It's like a poster from a Japanese magazine or something that shows like TK and I think Kari shopping, and like Patamon's carrying the hat, and it's like implying that Patamon like gave him one of the hats. It's like Patamon started it.
Yeah, I'm just like, also like, where are TK and Kari going? Like, what, like, I will, like, because they didn't get a lot of, I think along with Mimi and Joe, they didn't get a ton to do in that first movie. I'm very intrigued to see what they're doing with the O2 kids, because we got a glimpse of that in the beginning of the movie. You know, we got glimpses of Davis and Yoli and Cody and Ken, but yet we don't know what's happened to them. So I'm very intrigued by that.
Do you feel like it's, one of the complaints we had was that it was like very off how like they're dealt with, or they show to the viewer that it's like, you know, don't worry about them, we still remember them. But like, none of the characters remember them at all. And it's like, why didn't you call them or anything? Did you feel that it was off at all?
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that maybe they're playing with timelines. I'm not really sure. It does feel off because, I mean, you see TK and Kari, they have their D3 devices. So, and we've seen glimpses. I've seen some fans who theorize that maybe those glimpses in the beginning haven't happened yet, or maybe those aren't the characters that we're thinking they are. In my opinion, I think those are the characters. I think they are supposed to be Davis and Yoli and Cody. But I do think that was kind of a missed opportunity, but I understand, because when you're this first movie, I mean, they really had to sell it.
Yeah.
So I think this first movie had to bring us home. It had to introduce the characters that we know and love. And I think for a large population of Digimon viewers, those characters are probably Ty and Matt and Sora and Izzy and Mimi. And I think those were the characters that they focused on. And it makes sense that maybe Joe didn't get as much time because he's a little older. He's, you know, doing something else. That in my mind made sense. It also made sense that they didn't quite go into what happened with the O2 kids. And again, it could be possible that it hasn't happened yet. Not sure. But it made sense, because I think, you know, this movie, there's a lot riding on the first one, obviously. And I think that they did a great job of just reintroducing us to those core characters.
Yeah, I also think it's a smart strategy for having this, like, six serialized movies or whatever, however it's being called, because, like, I mean, they've kept things in their hat to pull out later. And, like, I feel like, you know, just having, like, Mimi and Joe not being focused in the movie and then being like, but Joe and Mimi on the cover of the next, or on the poster for the next one, it's like, oh my God, people are really excited for that. Yeah. And I think at some point, if they do that with the 02 kids, there's going to be another wave of excitement.
Yeah. And you also have a new character. So, I mean, introducing a new character at this point, I mean, you can't just introduce a new character and just say, okay, Mako's part of the crew now. Like, you know, you know that she is going to have some sort of narrative arc. So that's definitely implied. And it looks like she's kind of a big deal in taking down this, you know, new big bad Alphamon. So I'm intrigued to know more about her. And it looks like she's going to fit right in. Like, one of my favorite moments was watching how easily, like, Mimi and Sora and even Kari to a certain extent, like, took her under their wing. They were like, let's go shopping, like, hang out with us. Like, that to me, I was like, oh, that's so nice. Like, this is why I love the show.
I appreciate it. I was like, yes, make it more 50-50 gender-wise. Exactly.
That too. And also, like, I don't know, like, maybe Ty needs someone to get his mind off of Sora. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I have seen that. I think it's a popular ship idea so far. It's surprising me because, like, they've had two scenes where they even saw each other or something.
I mean, let's be real. The real ship of this movie was Ty and Matt.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Their friendship, their relationship, whatever you ship them as, whether you ship them romantically or you ship them as best friends. I think this movie really gave you a lot to work with.
Yeah, I was really surprised how much they focused on that. Like, it's like basically as close as you can get without actually making things explicit.
Yeah, exactly.
What did you think about the other ship teases, like the Izzy and Mimi or Joe and Mimi?
Yeah, it's funny. I am such a non-canon shipper. I always like traditionally. I'm a non-canon shipper for some reason. I just like characters who are never going to be, and I love getting my heart broken, I guess. But so for me, like, if I were to pick, like, a Digimon ship that I really like or have thought would work well together, it might sound weird, but I've always really liked the idea of Ty and Mimi. You know, even though they do have two really bombastic personalities, and it's kind of like, you know, maybe fire and oil, but I kind of love that idea. I doubt we're going to get that, but there were enough moments for me to be like, oh, Ty and Mimi have a great friendship. Like, I love the idea that, like, she teased him about paying for her trip to Japan. Like, I loved that. So that was enough to keep me satisfied. I think in terms of, like, all the I guess you would say canon ships, at least as we know it, as far as we know, the only canon ship in this show is Matt and Sora. So I think that it was definitely hinted at. They didn't really, I mean, dive it into the ground. It seems like, yeah, it's a thing that's happening, but they're not quite exploring it yet. I mean, I guess you had that scene of Sora debating, like, how is she going to make Ty's soccer game and Matt's show? Like, I guess you kind of see her in the middle there more so than you ever did in O2, which I like. But for me, I think it was about Mimi and Izzy. I love the fact that she busts his chops. You know, he has this innocent crush on her, and, you know, and she just loves to tease him about it. And so I thought that was actually, it was kind of cool to see. Because they hadn't explored that relationship. Obviously, it was a fan favorite relationship from Adventure, and a lot of fans have shipped them together, but they had never really explored it before. So I like the idea of them together. There's something about, you know, like Beauty and the Geek that is just... It's a trope, but it's a charming trope.
Yeah, I like her confidence matched with his shyness and just like her being completely in control of that dynamic.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, like Izzy will take you down. Like the other thing that blew me away was just like how in 3 years, Izzy had basically learned to like hack the system and like take over the world. The fact that he was able to create all of these insane things, like he created a whole other plane of existence for the Digimon. Like, are you kidding me? Like, that is the man. Like, if you want Mimi by you during a fight, like, you definitely want Izzy by your side as well. Like, because he could like take them down. Like, they're great together. I feel like they could honestly maybe save the day just by themselves.
They could rule the world.
Right? They totally could rule the world.
So to make things a little depressing, do you have any least favorite parts or parts you hated, just wish they weren't there, or aspects of it maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there are any like specific parts that I hated or that, you know, I'm like, oh, why did they do that? For me, the most disappointing part is probably the way, as much as I talk about how great Mimi was in the first film, I think there's so much more that they can do with the female characters. So I think it was it was disappointing to see that Sora was pretty much regulated to being the love interest. I think you can even say the same for Mimi in a way, and Kari didn't get much to do, and we just met Mako. So I think the franchise in general has a long way to go with making these female characters sort of come into their own and be their own heroes, which I think they did in Adventure, and I think they've done systematically throughout every season. I would just like to see more of it and try. And maybe that's coming, and I hope that it's coming. I just, you know, I don't want to spend 6 movies being like, oh, when is Sora going to like do something? Or, you know, can she not talk about Matt and Ty for 1 second, or like not feel bummed about it for 1 second? So, you know, especially because Sora, I think, was the epitome of that strong female character in Adventure. I think more, you know, eventually Mimi became that, and that's why I loved her. But I think Sora was always the tough girl, and we saw that there was real vulnerability there. And that to me is the strongest trait any character can have, is them being vulnerable. So I definitely want to see more of that. That was the disappointing part for me. But I also understand that I think this movie was really about Ty, and it was about his internal struggle and his struggle to really deem like what was right. So hopefully, I don't know what approach they're taking, if every movie is going to have, or if every movie is going to have like a different central character, or, you know, they made this one about Ty because he is undoubtedly the leader. But hopefully they give their female characters more to do.
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed just like thinking, like, I was like, oh, they had their own scenes where they were eating lunch, and it was just the, forget how many of them, but just female characters. And I was like, wait, but they all they talked about was boys. And like,
yeah,
that was disappointing.
We often lament Sora's character arcs. We're like, Sora, you could be so much more, and yet you get regulated to these things.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. Like, I saw a lot of fans complaining that she was too girly. And that, to me, I'm like, oh, I don't really care about that, because I think like that is the natural evolution for maybe someone who is a young tomboy at 11 years old and now is a 17-year-old young woman. She's like, no, I like dresses, and I like makeup, and I like, you know, I like being slightly more feminine, and that's fine. So I didn't have a problem with that, but it was just the fact that I want her to do more. I want her to be more. I feel like I think they really consider her to be a lead along with Matt and Ty. And if she's going to be a lead, I want to see her do something.
Yeah.
Something interesting. Yeah. I want to see her have that same emotional struggle that Ty and Matt had in the first movie, but not about boys, not about like, oh, who am I going to be with? Or like, they, you know, I wanted to see her struggle with something more. It'd be fascinating if they did maybe have her struggle with imposter syndrome, which is a thing that a lot of young women struggle with. And I think it's interesting that they are the heroes. And I think for a lot of people, they're being looked up as heroes, but what if they don't feel like a hero? I think that would be a really interesting story arc for a character like Sora to go through.
I hope they do that too now.
I love the idea of like Mimi being our feminist heroine. So like, I would love to see her be that. Like, please give me feminist Mimi. Like, all I dream of.
Yes.
Do you have any other hopes like that?
Well, aside from Sora's arc, which I, you know, they can do so much there. So I do hope that they give Sora something really meaningful to work with. And I do want them to play up the government angle. You know, I love that they felt like a real team, and they have their own like base of operations and this cool, they have like high tech gadgetry. So like that angle, I would love to see them the play up as well. And aside from that, I want more explanation as to what happened in the digital world. And I want to go back to the digital world. I really want to go back to the digital world. I don't know how they're going to accomplish that given, you know, it feels like they have a lot of time or they have a lot of room, but yet 6 movies is at 90 minutes each. It's not as much as you'd think. So I hope that they're able to go back to the digital world, maybe find out what happened to Davis and Yoli and Cody and Ken.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any predictions, things that you're like pretty sure will happen?
Predictions? I don't know. I'm like really, I'm leaning toward the whole Ty Manco thing. Whether that happens as a romantic ship or just like a friendship, I don't know. But I think that I would love to see him because take her under his wing in a way, or because she's so, I think, reserved. She's a little meek at this point, a little reserved. And he, you know, he needs to break out of this sort of hesitant headspace that he's been in. And I think the first episode really, or the first movie, excuse me, established that. And I would like to see him return to being a little bit more of himself as we knew him, a little bit more bombastic, a little bit more, you know, he has a lot of personality to work with. So I'd like to see more of that personality. And I think there could be a cool friendship between him and Mako. I think maybe he could bring her out of her shell a little bit. Maybe, you know, I want to know more about her character for sure. Like, I want to know, like, what is she into? You know, how does she fit with the vibe of the current cast? Like, what kind of archetype is she?
Yeah, we know so little about her so far.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be exciting to see.
Yeah, I know nothing about her. So that's obviously their whole mission, is like, we're not really supposed to know anything about her.
Yeah. If you had to give it a rating out of 1 to 5, with 5 being best, do you have an idea of what you'd rate it?
I think I would give it a solid 4 because I don't know what 5 is. Like, I would rate them all after I've seen them all because I don't know what 5 is in terms of where the story's going. So I'm going to give it a 4 because I loved it and it did all the things that I, aside from, you know, a few character beats, but it did all the things that I wanted it to. It felt like such an engrossing story that I wanted to be a part of and I wanted to watch. So I'm definitely going to give it a 4 because I think it was a solid effort. And hopefully the rest will be 5s because I think it's going in a great direction.
Yeah. So do you have any closing thoughts, any things you wanted to mention that didn't get a chance to?
I think I said everything, but now I'm like, I'm here for feminist Mimi. Like, I need feminist memes. I need just like anything related to Mimi. If anything, I think Try was a success because it redeemed Mimi in my eyes, or in many people's eyes. And it made me less of a freak for thinking that she was the most awesome character for so many years. I tried and I tried to tell people and they were like, they always wrote her off. So I'm just glad that now people are finally reveling in her greatness.
Yeah, we have another person who does this podcast with us who is also a ardent Mimi defender. Like, I will fight you. Mimi is the best.
Come on.
No, I will fight you. That's great. Because I guess I was never around those people. I guess that's what the internet's for. Is because
you should unite. Yeah, you should be fight force.
Yeah, that's why I love Tumblr, because only on Tumblr do I see all of the people who love Mimi like I do. And I'm like, oh, I feel like I'm at home.
You can find Crystal on Twitter at New York Belle, and you can find her writing at MTV News.
Let us know what you thought about this episode in our comments at podigis.com/T1.1. We also have detailed notes on the site about all the characters, images, and references we make, so check those out if you're curious about anything we mentioned.
Podigis is made possible with the support from our awesome Patreon, Amanda, Andre Lelouch, David Gao, Joe, Jacques Sant, Kailani, Sam Krieger, and Stephen Patamon.
If you want to become a Patreon and support the show, you can join Patreon Party, our private Slack chat group, for $1 a month. You can get monthly stickers for $5 a month, and you can get early episodes for $10 a month. We also have a lot more rewards and goals, so check those out at patreon.com/podigis.
Follow Podigis on Twitter, Tumblr, or Facebook to keep up with the Digimons and get funny images and gifts related to the show. If you don't like how I pronounce that, then become a Patreon to vote on how we have to pronounce GIF. You can find me on Twitter at AshMcD00. Jeffrey, where can they find you?
In a hole.
No.
You can find me on Twitter at JeffinlyJeff.
Editing a podcast. That's what you... There you find me.
In a hole, just editing a podcast.
You can also find links to all our social media accounts at podigis.com.
Our Catwoman artwork is by the awesome Mary Cagle. Check out her webcomics, Let's Speak English, and Kiwi Blitz, and she's also Cube Watermelon on Tumblr and Twitter, where she posts lots of other cool drawings and fan art pieces.
Share the podcast with your friends who are anxiously awaiting the next Try movie, and if your friends aren't anxiously waiting for the next Try movie, make them watch Tamers instead.
Next time on Podigis, we're going back to Tamers, but we still have another Try episode coming soon to test whether the movie works for viewers new to Digimon, so stay tuned. Bye! Bye. And remember, never stop Digimoning.
So may the odds be ever in your favor.
Do it again.
Why?
Because you didn't do it.
I didn't do it capital enough.
You weren't effy enough.
I wasn't effy enough. May the odds be ever in your favor.
So welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. I have to say, this is such a treat because I don't often get to talk about Digimon with my friends. So they have no idea what I'm talking about. So this is great.
Like, are you mispronouncing Pokemon?
Yeah, exactly. That's usually the response.
Yeah, I think I know a lot of people who like know what it is just as like a, think it's just a clone of Pokemon or just a cheaper version of Pokemon or something.
Yeah, or they remember it vaguely, but they're like, you're still into that? I'm like, yeah, I am. And I like, they finally gave Mimi like decent looking hair. I was like, I was not to her O2 pink hair with her the stars.
Pink and, yeah, blue hair thing with the stars.
It's pretty over the top.
Yeah, like, I love her for being, like, a risk taker, but I was not feeling the pink hair. So the fact that they gave her, like, good hair, I was like, yes, this I can get behind.
I was like, did they make her try to make her hair, like, the American flag? Is that what happened in year two? Like, I don't know.
Something that, like, in the course of discussion, things you brought up have made me kind of spend this idea of prediction or hope that, like the framing of this, I'm hoping will be like the first movie, Ty, you know, expresses his hesitancy and that maybe he'll like continue to be hesitant, but like each subsequent movie will focus on, you know, characters like Mimi and Joe and like in exploring those characters and having them do have their own arcs will like inspire Ty so that by the end, maybe it'll wrap back around to Ty and then he'll, you know, kind of return back to his old confidence, having seen everyone else and like getting courage from everyone else.
Yeah, I love that. I think that plays very well into the kind of person Ty is. Ty's always been that character that I think is way more observant than we give him credit for. You know, I think people often write him off as being someone who doesn't always think before he acts. And so therefore, I think that's why that first movie was so jarring for some fans, because they were like, whoa, he's overthinking this. Like, of course he needs to save the world and, you know, destroy Odaiba. Like, that. No. It's like, let's take a step back and realize that there are real world, like, consequences to these actions. So I think I would love to see it come full circle like that. I think that's a great prediction. I hope that every, you know, movie gets its own central character. I don't know if they'll go in that direction. I don't, you know, in my opinion, I wouldn't mind if, you know, Ty and Matt and even Sora were the main trio and then everybody else was sort of the supporting cast, because I think your supporting cast could be equally strong.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've seen that actually, like with Izzy and Mimi being such, in my opinion, from what I've seen in the fandom, I think people have latched onto those characters and from the first movie way more than any of the other characters.
Yeah, they can kind of shine in the background more than they maybe can in the spotlight.
Yeah, so I don't know if they're, I hope that they go the episodic route in terms of, you know, every character gets their chance to shine and have their own arc. I don't know if that's possible in this format, but that's why I'm like intrigued to see where it goes. Cause I don't know what they can do with six movies. You know, I was blown away by what they accomplished in the first movie. And, so I'm very much looking forward to see what they can do with the next five.